Welcome to the Floor Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 17th of April, recording at 9:35 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, first, a quick look at the highlights here. And in terms of global stock markets, well, you know, they've completed most of them at any rate, have completed a sixth consecutive week of gains. And elsewhere, well, today also we saw a generally firm tone here, quiet in terms of the activity. Some of the better gains in Europe, Wall Street seesawed a little bit, but closed with very, very slight gains. Long-dated government bonds generally easier on the week. In currencies, the dollar was steady overall. Nothing dramatic shown. The dollar index is just beneath 86 on its close today. For drama, in addition to the stock market rally, we have seen softness in gold and silver, and we have seen stunning strength in most of the industrial metals, and this has been led by copper and and zinc and lead. And soybeans continued firm, although they're down just a little bit in here today. And white sugar has also been firm. Okay, so I should mention energy, though, given its importance, and hovering around the $50 level. That's crude oil, of course. All right, so what's going on here in terms of the big picture theme overall? Well, as far as stock market action is concerned, it is very consistent with that floor money theme that we saw a major selling climax back in October and early November. And that the prognosis was for a lengthy ranging reversion to the mean in terms of the 200-day moving averages, which was very likely to be part of an overall base formation development process. Lengthy, partly because markets crashed, and that puts the fear, if not of God, of something in people, mostly of further losses. In investors, and also because it's been a financial crisis, and those tend to cause more economic damage, and that gets reflected in stock market activity overall. Now, given the focus on Wall Street by so many people, most investors were highly skeptical about that prognosis, but one of the things we very much focus on at Fuller Money, as you know, is the overall global view, because while Wall Street is the biggest and most influential stock market in the world by far, its sheer size means that it's seldom the leader, particularly on the upside. So we need to look elsewhere, and the countries with the better fundamentals in terms of current accounts, in terms of earnings, in terms of saving ratios, in terms of debt levels, have not surprisingly led the way on the upside, and China has been very much to the fore. Also, the China group generally has been very strong. That's obviously the H shares and also the HSI out of Hong Kong. Also, Taiwan. And Taiwan, I might have mentioned in the introduction, but merits special mention here today, because China has boomed recently, not only because of the China association link, but also because it's a tech market, and the tech sector has been very strong at the forefront of the global stock market rally. But today, China had a significant key day reversal to the downside. And that checked what was actually a seven-week rally for the Taiwan index. It was incredibly orderly up until today's key. Owen wrote about this and also pointed out that the K-day reversal was replicated by the banking sector, which had been very strong in Taiwan as well, not surprisingly. So in our parlance, that means that the key has almost certainly capped the rally for at least the short term, and we can expect a further ranging consolidation. Monday will be interesting because if Taiwan were to shrug off the decline by not following through on Monday, it's certainly not going to shrug it off by going back up through the high, quickly. But if it doesn't follow through on the downside, that would bode well for a shallower correction. On the other hand, if it's weak on Monday, that would suggest that short covering's coming in as well as plenty of selling. But China has, I beg your pardon, Taiwan has rallied so sharply that it has plenty of room to consolidate gains above its base formation, and that is very much what we expect. There were. Well, I was going to say there might have been a special factor there, although I would be careful about assuming that's the case. The news report on Taiwan attributed the move to some disappointment that the banking tie-ups with, excuse me, with mainland China may not be as advantageous for the Taiwanese banks as investors had initially hoped. Well, we'll see. But pay attention, or I think we should all pay attention to what happens on Monday in terms of Taiwan's action. And partly because it had been the leader of the rally, and the leaders tend to peak first overall. And a lot of people have been talking about how global stock markets are overextended and overbought in the short term, and certainly we pointed it out that that was the case in terms of short-term indicators, but that they could become overbought and stay overbought for quite some time. More importantly than that, we've also emphasized that if it's a really good rally rather than just a typical bear market rally, that it would be orderly and consistent and persistent, and that's exactly what we've seen. But Taiwan may well represent a shot across the bows for other stock markets in terms of indicating that the global rally is becoming increasingly susceptible to a pause in consolidation. I'm not looking for new lows. I think even the weakest stock markets are likely to encounter support above their lows, but that's an opinion. If you want to see bullish action, then stock markets should, including Wall Street and the European stock markets, which have been the laggards, bullish development would be to see them maintain at least half of the rallies that they've seen from their March lows. Now, if you're looking for or expecting bearish action, that would be confirmed by moves back to those lows and eventually beneath them. I think the balance of technical evidence suggests that what we are seeing is all part of a bottoming out and base building process, which is always likely to be lengthy for the laggards that had the greatest economic problems. Those are the US and the European countries, which are at the epicenters of the global credit and insolvency crisis. I've got quite a tickle in my throat here, as you may have noticed, but I'll soldier on here, and apologies for the slightly faltering performance. I'm kicking myself, metaphorically speaking, for not having shorted gilts or bunds in here this week, as they were quite weak today. I've often mentioned that I would quite probably miss this trade because I was concerned about the promise, or more likely threat, of the quantitative easing. In other words, governments moving in to buy their own paper. And they've done that fairly effectively to jawbone the bond prices upwards and keep yields low. There's a chance that as stock markets go into a consolidation phase in the not too distant future, there's a chance that we may well see a little bit steadier action in the bond futures prices, so that might give us or give me another crack at it. You may already be short and enjoying the profits. But I do feel that one is spoiled for choice in terms of opportunities in these markets. I've said it for quite some time. I've for at least several months have said that when the perception of risk is highest, it's usually lowest. We've seen basically the biggest asset reflation in history. And that's good for stock markets, as we've seen, and that's good for commodity markets. And that will remain the case, I feel, over the medium term, and medium term, at least over the medium term. Medium term at Fuller Money is everything from a few months to a couple of years. And I feel that having said that, this was what we have been seeing since the October, early November selling climax was a the beginning that represented really the beginning of the bottoming out and base building process, and therefore it also represented the ending of the bear market. Now, the bear market ending also is the same thing as the beginning of the new bull market. So I feel that that's very much what we are seeing. And the danger signs, and everybody feels that the danger signs are in the form of another banking crisis, or weak growth or lower corporate profits. But, you know, so much of that is already written into the price action that we saw on the downside. And then, of course, we've had all those massive bailout packages overall. To repeat myself, the greatest asset reflation in history. So it's hardly surprising that some of that money slips into the stock market and slips into the commodity markets and other asset markets. So I'm not worried about bad news so much. I think we will have plenty of bad news, but as I've said before, it'll be less bad than it was previously. In other words, the fourth quarter economic statistics were a nightmare. The first quarter really are, well, maybe not quite as bad. And I think the second quarter, when we get those figures reported and say in July and August, they will be less bad, and that the fourth quarter will be even less bad than the third quarter. So that's a background in which people's expectations of Armageddon and the end of the world, well, they're the same thing, aren't they, are not being fulfilled, and they'll be left to consider how feeble the economic recovery may actually be. Well, the best of the economic recovery, I think, will be in the Fuller Money themes led by Asian emerging markets and also the resources markets. And those are being led by the South American resources countries, the big one being Brazil. And that's a good, compelling story. Overall, what else to mention here? In currencies mostly range, and we don't see the type of volatility that we get in stock markets and in commodity prices. They're traded on an extremely leveraged basis, and the turnover is absolutely vast, totally dwarfs what we see in bonds and in stock markets. But that vast turnover helps to keep the spreads between peaks and troughs comparatively narrow. But the way we feel it's shaping up is that the resources currencies and the Asian emerging market currencies will be the stronger ones on average, and that the carry trade currencies, such as the yen and also the US dollar, will be somewhat weaker. The yen has been fulfilling that prophecy rather nicely. The dollar hasn't yet, but it does look choppy and toppy in terms of its action, in my view. I don't look for a dollar collapse, as I've said before. I never have. But I think that the dollar is likely to be lower than its current level in 3 to 6 months, 9 months, 9 months' time. And I've played modest short positions from time to time, and I've been a little bit more active in shorting the yen, but I don't have any of those positions at the moment. Now, what else to mention? Yes, the hard money currency, gold, has been underperforming in here over the last 6 weeks or so. And we really shouldn't be surprised by that, because it was such a strong outperformer. And I've said daily in these broadcasts, as has Owen, that gold was going through a difficult, awkward period here when the Armageddon buyers were drifting away because they saw the asset reflations taking place. So they were taking profits in gold and moving on to other areas. And gold wasn't quite low enough to bring in the currency hedge buyers, or I should rephrase that and say the long-term buyers who are very wary of fiat money, and count me among that group in terms of being very wary of fiat money. I bought back into gold too soon on the correction. Ditto silver. I'm inclined to ride it out, but it's always feels a little bit masochistic when something's moving against you. I'm talking about the gold and silver futures here right now, but they're still soft and very much in need of upward dynamics. And gold technically needs to get back above $900 to really firm up the pattern. And if you look at the patterns of sentiment, they were just, you know, it was in the headlines just a little bit too much. Just too many people were all bullish and forecasting huge multiple advances for gold. Well, you know, I've said all along, it is what it is. And in terms of its price action, in other words, if it's trading what have we got here today? If it's trading at $869, that's what it's worth. Not 10,000 or whatever, or 6,000 or 3,000 or 2,000 or whatever price that people are talking about in their draconian forecasts. I am a long-term bull of gold. I have been really since 2000 and 2001, when the bear market ended. And I think gold is a good asset to consider purchasing following setbacks. And we're getting one of those setbacks now, so we've probably seen the worst of the decline, but I see no evidence that decline is over. But I'll conclude on gold where I started and say that we shouldn't be surprised that it's underperforming here now. Having outperformed when people were so terrified, it's obviously going to be overshadowed by other markets when we're getting technical rallies off lows, and people begin to feel that they become more frightened of being out of a rally than being long in a decline, especially if that decline isn't actually occurring in those depressed assets that I speak of. Industrial metals, that's a hot area, and it's all been driven by China's buying of copper. And that has just ignited interest in the other markets, which are already really quite depressed. They had some short positions in them, no doubt. And people have said, well, The copper move, I read the other day, the copper move was somebody saying the copper move is ridiculous because if the numbers are right, that China has bought 5 years' worth of its consumption requirements of copper. Well, I don't know if that's true or not, but it doesn't seem ridiculous. And put it this way: if you have a whole lot of money, what do you buy with it? U.S. dollars, U.S. treasuries, or do you buy cheap real assets in scarce supply that you know you're going to need over the next 5 years? Well, that's a no-brainer. And I think China, well, we know that China's been buying other commodities. They've been buying soybeans. They've most likely been buying other metals as well. But copper's the big one in terms of China's needs because it has to import over 50% of its requirements, whereas that's not true of other industrial metals. It produces a higher proportion of them, much higher proportion of its consumption actually within China. But the move that we've seen upwards in the zincs and leads and more recently nickel may well reflect that some interest from China. But other people, such as ourselves and some of you, have recognized this pattern and the commonality and have gone in to establish long positions in these markets. And I think that some countries that may have been overimpressed by the depression deflation theorists suddenly find that, well, where they'd been hoping to buy copper at let's say $1.50, that suddenly it's at 2.20 and they're not so happy about it, and so coming in to increase their positions. And then I posted, or I'm about to post, a report by Jan Bylov of Nordea, one of the best analysts and traders going. He points out that there's a very big short position in copper as well, so that's being squeezed. So this is the interesting sector, and that's where the profits are being made. I have reduced my nickel and copper copper positions into strength, but I still have some, and I'm riding it with trailing stops. And soybeans, they've gotten away from me, but that's the grain, or the that's the member of the bean complex, grain and bean complex, that interests me the most, not least because there's a backwardation. I believe there's still backwardation with rough rice as well, which makes it interesting. But I prefer the industrial commodities overall. That would include oil, but there's quite a bit of oil still sloshing about, and therefore I maintain that this will require more base building overall before we see a significant upside move. But I think we will see that. So, what to worry about? Well, what I worry about is when governments, well, I, it's, I'll just repeat a point I made earlier on, and as I wrap up this broadcast, I will not be worrying about another banking collapse, another skeleton to fall out of the closet. Of course, that will happen. There will be other, I think, mostly little banks that have to be rescued or closed in the West. I think there will be definitely be more skeletons coming out of the closets. I don't think I would trust the reporting that's coming from the banks. But this is a crisis that is easing rather than increasing. I don't want to go in and buy bank shares. I don't need to. As I said, because we're spoiled for choice overall. So I'm not worried about the things that everybody else seems to be worrying about, or those who are quite bearish or frightened or worried about. The things to worry about, which are not on the immediate horizon, are when governments start to withdraw some of that excess liquidity that's in the system. That will certainly be something to worry about. And when we see simultaneously short-term interest rates to begin to move up, that will worry me a great deal. When the oil price is in a clear uptrend once again, that will worry me a great deal. When stock markets are trading well above their 200-day moving averages, that will worry me. Again, a great deal. None of those are near-term problems, incidentally. So I think this is still quite an attractive time for markets generally. But be on the lookout for technical evidence similar to what we saw in Taiwan today. It probably won't be as dramatic. But keep an eye out for that type of action to signal that we've ended the short-term uptrend and commenced a reaction and consolidation of gains before markets resume their recoveries. And I think that's pretty much it. So I'll just wish you a very, very enjoyable weekend. That's what I look forward to. Meanwhile, all the very best to all of you.